Good morning. A fifth day of violence between Israel and Hamas in Gaza continues, and as the inauguration inches closer, it becomes clear that this might be the first immediate conflict that President-elect Barack Obama will be contending with when he takes office. But what exactly is his stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Joining us now is Robert Malley. He is the Middle East and North Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group, and he's also a former special assistant to President Clinton for Arab-Israeli Affairs. And he joins us from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how do you think, given the dynamics that have been unfolding in this past basically a couple of weeks, how do you think Barack Obama will handle the current conflict?
Well, a lot depends on what the conflict looks like on January 20th, 21st. I mean, will it have been ended by then, the conflict in Gaza? Will there be a ceasefire? Will things have gotten worse? Will Israel have reinvaded Gaza? So he, right now, all he knows is that there's a number of scenarios in front of him, and not one of them looks particularly good. But he can't really make any decisions until he knows what the reality on the ground will be come the time he becomes president.
Clearly, his transition team and others have repeatedly been asked questions about what the president-elect is thinking about these developments, and they have repeatedly deflected those questions by saying that there should only be one president at a time. But it's completely clear he's taking office in 3 weeks. There's going to be something about this Israeli-Palestinian conflict that the president-elect is going to have to address.
Right. First, I think it's not a bad thing that he doesn't say too much, because almost anything he says now is likely to anger one side or the other, either the Israelis or the Arabs, and he doesn't gain much from it because there's not much he could do about it. He could have a position that is different from that of the current president, but he wouldn't be able to execute it. He could have a similar position, but nonetheless, he doesn't appear like he's in the driving seat. So I think silence is probably one of the better things he could do.
Well, let's take a look at some of the people that he has surrounded himself with. There's Dennis Ross. He's a former Mideast convoy under the envoy, rather, under the Clinton administration, and Daniel Kurtzer, who is Bush's ambassador to Israel. What are those two people? What do they say about what you think Obama may be thinking?
Well, they're not saying much, precisely because they're on the transition team. Both of them are people who were mainly active under the Clinton years, and I think we know that both of them are in favor of a much more intensive, engaged U.S. policy in the Middle East. They have differences between them, clearly, but they both would subscribe to the view that the U.S. has been far too absent over the last 8 years, has let things get to the stage where they are today, and that the U.S. needs to reassert itself, be more active, be present on the ground, try to mediate between Israelis and Palestinians, and also talk to countries like Syria and Iran as a means of lessening tension. So they share that view, but they have quite significant differences between them.
Well, Robert Malley, let's talk about the Clinton example, if we could, for a moment. Bill Clinton was fond of high-stakes mediation scenarios, and in the case of the Arab-Israeli conflict, was actually involved in one that really failed, and some have said the failure of that mediation effort between Ehud Barak and the Palestinians provoked a lot of subsequent violence. Do you think Barack Obama has the, I don't want to say stomach, but do you think it's his style to try something like that, particularly since the first order of business from the Israeli perspective is to get a unified Palestinian stand and get out of this Hamas-Fatah divide within the Palestinian community?
I'm not sure that's Israel's first order of business, but on your point about the summit in which I participated and was a witness to and an actor in the failure, I think there are lessons to be drawn from that, and I think not only Barack Obama, but his advisors, including those who were active under Clinton, have learned those lessons, that a high-stakes summit coming at a time when the parties may not be ready for a deal has its risks. As Clinton said at the time, it's better to try and fail than not to try at all, but you better try under the right circumstances, in the right way, and taking the right precautions. So I don't think that we're going to see that kind of summitry and that kind of high-wire diplomacy be resumed, but the good lessons of the Clinton years are that the U.S. will remain involved, that it has to always be in touch with all the parties who are in conflict in one way or the other.
Well, but you avoided the question of whether it's a priority to make Hamas and Fatah a more unified Palestinian front. From Israel's perspective, they are on the record saying they want a place to bargain, a bargainer for the Palestinians who they consider to be credible, and neither Fatah nor Hamas is that at this point.
Well, that certainly is my position. I don't think the Israeli government has taken the position that they want Fatah and Hamas to be reconciled. They'd want a unified Palestinian leadership.
Fair point.
They would prepare that it be without Hamas, and that's partly what's going on right now. So I don't think that you have, at least on the record, Israeli government officials saying that they would welcome Hamas's return into a national unity government.
Well, can Barack Obama get Hamas out of the picture in some sort of policies by projecting some sort of policy?
You know, I think Barack Obama, my sense is that he and his team have a pretty clear policy about what to do about negotiations between Israel and Hamas and the Palestinians, about Syria, about a whole host of questions. I don't think they yet have a clear answer about what to do about Hamas because, number one, it is very difficult, but number two, it's very politically explosive. So I don't think that they have yet reached a conclusion in their own minds about what you do with about an organization that has such support, that has such effectiveness, that has the ability to torpedo any initiative, but that right now the United States is not in a position to talk to. I think that's a real dilemma, and they haven't resolved it.
Robert, do you think there'll be any surprises when he takes office, if you're saying that his team has some ideas about how they're going to deal with some of the actors in the region, maybe not Hamas specifically, but clearly Iran, dealing with Iran and dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there's much that can go together between the two.
Oh, I think surprises are the one certain thing we know. And this what we've just seen now could have happened 3 weeks from now, and that could have really confronted Barack Obama with his first crisis. As I said, it may be resolved, or at least it may have been transformed by the time he takes office. But we know for a fact that any notion that you're going to have a clean Israeli-Palestinian peace process negotiations, uninterrupted by violence, uninterrupted by Hamas or by other radical groups, is a pure illusion. We're going to have to deal with those questions. We're going to have to deal with the question of Gaza. We're going to have to deal with the question of Hamas. And I would hope that we do it in a wiser, smarter way than the Bush administration has done for the last several years.
The Israeli offensive against Gaza continues for the fifth day. Describe, you think, the effect to the region, the regional politics that these 5 days have had.
Well, as usual, with these conflicts which are waged with the intent to diminish the capacity of a radical militant group, it ends up strengthening its posture in the region. Hamas is now viewed by many Arabs as standing up for Arab honor and dignity. They may well be very much weakened in Gaza, but they're strengthened in the rest of the region, and that is part of their calculation. I think that's why these conflicts very rarely achieve their goals and end up sometimes having a boomerang effect of strengthening the party that one intends to weaken.
You know, and that makes perfect sense to me, Robert Malley, but then it makes no sense for why Arab governments seem to be so on the sidelines, and even if they might want in their heart of hearts to see a diminishing role for Hamas, they are apparently willing to allow this profile to increase and play directly into Hamas's hands. How come there is no regional player stepping forward here?
Because they're caught, because most of those governments dislike Hamas and, as you say, would like to see it weakened, but they have a public opinion that feels very differently, and they can't afford to appear to be, and already a number of them are being accused of being too much on the side of Israel, like the Egyptian government. They can't afford to go further in that direction. They don't want to support Hamas. And they're caught exactly in the same way as they were caught in 2006 when Israel went after Hezbollah. So you have governments like Egypt, like Saudi Arabia, like others, that frankly just don't know what to do, want this to go away, would like Hamas to go away, but don't know how to deal with it. And the gap between them and their public opinions is being revealed the broader by the day.
Can this impasse be broken? We've heard some say that perhaps Turkey could play an integral role in breaking some of these tensions in what you've just described.
I think yes. I think countries like Turkey, there are others like it, that have the ability to speak to Israel and the Israelis trust and like them, or at least want to deal with them, but that also have the trust and confidence of Hamas, which Egypt does not have today. I think they possibly could play a role. They're not really the ones who could conclude a deal because they don't have that kind of authority, probably, but they certainly can play a very important role. And because the U.S. is absent, because the U.S., for several reasons, won't talk to one of the parties in conflict, Hamas, it can't play that kind of role right now. Well, others are going to have to step in.
Well, we've got a minute, and before we go, let's focus on Hamas then for a second, since you raised it. The result of the Lebanon War in 06 for Hezbollah is they obtained a veto over the politics in Beirut. Is it likely that the result for Hamas here is an essential de facto veto over Palestinian politics?
Well, I don't know about that, because the relations between Hamas and Fatah, the dominant Palestinian party, the other dominant secular Palestinian party, are so bad that it's hard to imagine them coming together. but certainly in terms of their authority on the Palestinian street. If you were a Palestinian today and you looked on the one hand at Hamas, which is resisting Israeli bombardment, forget the fact that they may have provoked it, and on the other hand, Fatah, which is completely passive, can't do anything, is talking to the Israelis, condemning them on the one hand, where would your sympathies go? So I think there is a fear that right now, at least among the moderate Palestinians, that Hamas may gain more power.
Robert Malley, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We certainly do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Robert Malley is Middle East and North Africa Program Director for the International Crisis Group and a former Special Assistant to President Clinton for Arab-Israeli Affairs.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.